Hello, and welcome to another episode of Classy Coders, the podcast that connects computer science educators with technology professionals. My name is Alan Ireland. I am your host. I am the brand and visual communications lead for Code Virginia. And with me, I have Helen Sapieca and Ingrid Nelson. Dr. Sapieca, you are to my immediate right. Would you please introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you work, what you do.
Thank you, Alan. Yes, I'm Helen Sapieca, and I am fortunate enough to be the administrator of the Computer Science Lab School that is co-located at Oscar Smith Middle School in Chesapeake, Virginia. This lab school is made possible by a grant from the VDOE, and we're in partnership with Old Dominion University, which is our Institute of Higher Education. And through this partnership, we're able to offer our students a technical experience at the middle school level, exploring computer science in all contents and elective courses.
Yay! It's very exciting. I am a Virginia Beach native, so hearing that something like that is happening in Chesapeake, so close to Virginia Beach, so close to home, it's really, really exciting to hear that. We love computer science education, and a lab school sounds like a really, really interesting project to spearhead, so that's super cool for you. Congratulations.
And absolutely. Thank you so much.
Of course. Ingrid, would you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe your role, and you know what you do?
Yes. So my name is, thank you, Alan. My name is Ingrid Nelson. I'm a senior data analyst at Bank of America. My day-to-day job supporting electronic payments. And so I support ACH, wire, real-time payments. And I'm also the proud co-chair of our Women in Technology and Operations K-12 outreach. And so I go around to areas, school colleges to promote STEM and the pipeline filled with the underserved. And so that those are my day-to-day roles.
Another amazing initiative, something that we really, really love to see and hear about at Code Virginia. That's something that is really at the top of our mind at all times, is making sure that especially kids in underserved communities gain access to computer science education so that they can prepare themselves for, you know, the technological future that we all see and know is coming, is here right now in a lot of different ways, but, you know, is only going to grow and become more and more part of our lives as, you know, as time goes on. So thank you for the work that you do as well. That's very, very inspiring.
Thank you.
Of course. So we'll start with a few little like quick hit questions, and then we'll get into the sort of deep divey, you know, good juicy bits. But what's one thing that initially surprised you about the world of computer science? Could be something a student did or said, could be something that, you know, you started to teach and realized that, like, this has way more connections that you thought, maybe Sapieca or Ingrid, you know, something in your role or job, like maybe when you first started or maybe yesterday, you know, it depends on, you know, what may have surprised you. I know that in the world of computer science, everybody's a lifelong learner. So what's something that initially surprised you?
Oh, Alan, that's so funny because everything surprises me in computer science. My initial background is in English, and I'm really in administration and school leadership. But when this opportunity came available to open this lab school in the South Norfolk borough of Chesapeake, serving our Title I kids, I was like, I'm in. That's my jam. But what surprised me, and I think surprises my kids and my families all the time, is that computer science is not synonymous with technology. And I think that even our teachers had to have a pause to really construct in their brain that computer science is the strands and elements, and technology is the vehicle for us to be learning it. So I constantly talk to our families about, you know, computer science isn't just playing on computers, right? It's learning the impacts of computing. It's learning cybersecurity and AI. It's taking time to learn the data analysis and the algorithms and the programming. But it's not just the pieces of technology. Now, those are super cool, and everybody loves to fly drones and play in our video arcade, but it's computer science is really about computational thinking, right? So we're challenging our students to be thinkers in different ways, and then ultimately apply that in any field that they want to go pursue after, not just the technology sector. So for me, that was my biggest surprise, but then I find that surprise over and over and over again with our families, our teachers, and even our students who will come up to me and say, did you know? And I love to answer, I did not know. Tell me. Right? Because that is been an encouraging journey to listen to all of the things that they understand what computer science is, and that they too can be computer scientists.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's not just about technology. It's about the ways in which you think and, the construction of those ideas a lot of times.
Yes, and they're always so surprised. We do a lot of low or no tech lessons at all. And the kids are like, "What are we working on today?" And I'm like, "Well, it's not what the technology you're working on, it's the type of thinking you're working on." And it's always a, "Oh, you got me again." But it's that shift that we're trying to get them to think that computational thinking can be done in any core content, any elective class, and it does not require a computer.
I love it. Love hearing about integration into other subjects, another Code VA
That's
pillar
right.
of our nonprofit. So that's awesome to hear about.
From my perspective, in the thing, most surprising thing is the fact that how much soft skills are needed in the workforce. It's really not what you know. You could communicate critical, like Hans said, critical thinking skills. Being able to work with a team, because we do those, we work as a group, and to be able to have conflict resolution and empathy for your peers and work as a group, that's much more important than the technical skills. I was just meeting with a leader yesterday, and she was saying that she can teach the hard skills, but she can't teach somebody to work with a customer. That's something that's innate to, or something that you can work on as you grow. But it's much more business acumen, knowing that the group that you're supporting and knowing their needs and identifying it, be able to communicate non-technical with, because most of the people you communicate with are going to be managers and people that are in your field. So you have to be able to talk, as they say, kitchen English to them, to be able to understand the data that you came up with. And so it's really the soft skills that are also important. So I do teach a lot of workshops and hard skills, but it's also a good thing to focus on the soft skills as well. Remember, that's just as important because, as they said, soft skills, those things are innate to you, and those things that are yet being learned. And so it's important to be able to focus on the critical thinking and
Yeah,
computational thinking as
absolutely.
well.
It's yeah, these pieces of software are meant to solve a problem, and that's a human problem. And so being able to empathize and talk about that from the human side is, like you just said, it's incredibly critical. Is that I love that idea of, the soft skills being something that is surprised you about computer science and like how you might have to use those. And it problem solving, I'm sure, is something that you do in your day-to-day role, and then also, to your peers.
Yes, it's very important because a lot of time you have a chart or you have a dashboard. You have to communicate those results to the team to get their buy-in. And if you can't, you'll have strong communication skills, no matter how pretty your data is. If you can't communicate that, you won't get results you wanted. So it's very important to focus on those skills as you're growing in your career.
Right. And I'm sure how often in your day-to-day life are you having to talk to a non-technical team member?
Yeah, they're always telling us, please don't put acronyms in your sum, because we that person doesn't work in your department, so they're not going to know what that acronym means. And the bank is loaded with acronyms, and so you have to have it where it, whatever wherever the summary or the go to green plan is, it has to be in kitchen English and easy to understand language. So from Brian and Moynihan and RC down to anybody can understand what the issue is. It has to be very clear and concise. And so that's a skill that needs to be worked on.
Yeah. And the more complex these problems and solutions become, the more difficult that can be. The more you get into the nitty-gritty about, what needs to change and what needs to be altered, or the data set that's being accessed and why and how to collect that data. I mean, it's incredibly, that's technical stuff. Where in the process that data gets collected, how it gets collected, and then communicating that is, I'm sure, very, very, very complex.
You know, that's so
That's
encouraging to
great.
hear too for our middle school kiddos, because We redesigned our classrooms so that they have to be functioning in groups. They have standing tables and no individual desks. But that is alarming to a lot of kids because they want to take their computer and go solve the problem. They want to go program the code by themselves, but we make it so they have to interact. And Ingrid, I love when you spoke on the empathy piece because for us, we're really focused on design thinking. So finding the problem, analyzing that, then developing what we're going to do from there. But those soft skills, absolutely critical. I would say naturally, my students have a lot of grit in our area from their backgrounds. However, the communication piece, the ability to do critical thinking and collaboration together, that is so critical. And I love hearing you say that because it makes me believe that if we start that at 10, 11, 12, then hopefully by the time they're joining the workforce, that it's just natural that they're pulling up a chair next to their colleague and saying, "Hey, what did you get for this? Or how can you help me with this?" And I'm hoping that those sentence stems and those starters will help prepare them for the workforce. But I might need you to come in and talk to our kiddos too, because they naturally tend to want to go work in silos. And we're trying to push really against that, with the value of collaboration.
Yeah, I love to hear that. That those are the most important things, because especially when bugging and writing code, you'd be stuck. You spend your time, hours trying to figure out, you could bounce off a colleague, look at, please review my code. What do you think wrong? Because they usually have they have an insight that you don't have because you've been working on it for hours, that they can help move it along very quickly. And so, yeah, that it's very important to work as a team, because there are very few jobs at a bank that you work in silos. There's always a team effort, and you have to be able to work together in order to accomplish your goals.
Yeah, I really love celebrating those light bulb moments when someone is able to come in, right? Because they have fresh eyes, and then they're like, "Oh wow, did you see like line three? You just didn't click this."
Yeah, I
And
noticed
then
that one.
celebrating that, like, wow. Yeah. And then for kids, it's celebrating that they supported someone, not that they got the right answer, but the celebration is in the process versus the product. And we're always trying to move in that direction with the lab school because the product's great and all. But the process of getting there is the foundation to doing bigger and better things together.
That's really inspiring. Especially like I helped my niece with her math to, like sort of like prep for her math SOL recently. She's 8 or 9, so just like, and she's a performer, and that's her thing. She loves being on stage. She's been in musicals. She's memorized lines, but for whatever X, Y, and Z reason, she just like math times tables are just not slotting into the brain for her. And that's like that's understandable. Math doesn't come naturally to everybody. But then I started, taking the route of appreciating her effort of, like she took the time to think. She gave it a second in her head. And that sort of idea of emphasizing the effort and emphasizing the fact that, your student worked with somebody else and things like that, as opposed to, worrying about whether or not it's the right answer. Did your code work the first time correctly? If it didn't, you're a failure. There's a mental shift that really, really needs to happen, especially when you're working with these difficult subject areas like this, where it's like, okay, yeah, maybe you didn't get the right answer about this equation the first time, but you thought about it. You tried, and that trying, that effort is really, really important to make sure that kids emphasize that in themselves, so that they're not, getting bogged down with right or wrong answers and all those sorts of things. So I love hearing that from both of you. It's just really, really cool to hear about that.
Yeah, it's so encouraging to hear it fit into different spaces too. And I always think the idea of give them the answer first and then challenge them to find the pathway to the answer. But then also challenge them in groups to say, you did it one way, but can you do it two more ways? And then suddenly everybody has to be involved because maybe you did it this pathway, but you could also do it this pathway. And then that conversation is, well, which one's more efficient? Which one's more stable? Which one works easier? Which one's better to understand for the layperson who doesn't know coding? So I do love that aspect of computer science because you don't necessarily have to find the solution. As educators, we can give that to them and then be about the process.
Yeah, and
That sounds
that's
like something that you've Yeah, please. I was just about to prompt you, Ingrid, that that's, I'm sure that sounds like something you encounter in your day-to-day life.
Yeah, there are, as Helen probably know, well, you both probably know, there's 10 ways to do anything. And so, I mean, your initial way may be a hack and slash job just to get it done, but it, over time you improve that process. So yeah, I understand the find solution first and can you do another way? Because usually there are 10 other ways you could have done it that maybe work better or worse. But yeah, that's the world of tech. There is always different ways to solve a problem. And it's never perfection the first time. Usually, a lot of times in my job, it's about getting it done quickly because I have a deadline meet. So, may not be pretty, but it's there, and the results are there, and I can fine tune it later. But yes, yeah, that is my day to day life.
I love that. I love hearing, especially from somebody in the professional world, say things like that of like, it might not be perfect. It might not be, there isn't a perfect, right? That's a, that's a misnomer that doesn't exist in software because there's 10 different ways to do everything, right? But, making sure, making something that's functional and then letting it do its job for however long before you revisit it. And I mean that's that same process with creativity. Making a bad first draft is the first step in writing your manuscript, your book, your screenplay, those sorts of things. And I'm a theater major, so but forgive the examples, but that's something that is encouraged, especially in the educational space. And then hearing that that is a similar process in a professional capacity is so encouraging to hear, especially if a student is listening to this, that it's like that's just how the world works. It's you make something that works, you give it a little bit of time, and you revisit it and see if you can make it better, make it more efficient, make it easier for somebody to understand if it's a legacy system that somebody else is going to be working on in 5, 10 years or something like that. So I think my next few questions were, if you had to pick one word to describe the most important skill in computer science, what would it be? If the, what's a common misconception people have about computer science that you'd like to clear up? I feel like our discussion of soft skills and those sorts of things sort of answer those questions. Is there any other things that those questions prompt you to bring up, common misconceptions or the most important skill in computer science?
For me, it's creating visual representation of other computer scientists in the field. Everybody knows, the key players who are in the textbooks, but they often don't see, especially for my students, people of the same nationality, the same background, the same socioeconomic situation, excelling in the field. So for them, it's creating visuals, whether it's down our hallways or whether they're researching people. In my office, I have an entire list of computer scientists from Hopper to Bryant to Dean to Easley to Goldwasser. And when they come in, I always ask them, who do you not know? And then my turn away is, okay, but tomorrow when I see you again, can you tell me what you know about them? And they'll come up and be like, did you know Arana Daniels? Bah, 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 bah. And I'm like, no, of course not. But I love hearing and then telling me, oh, but do you know, she's actually from this area, and so is my family, and I didn't know that anyone actually did computer science there. And you got to understand, to an 11-year-old, seeing people in their space is probably the most critical opportunity for them to want to be a part of it.
Ingrid, thoughts?
Well, I love the representation. That is the one of the key reasons why I do volunteerism in the classroom, is that they could see that at the end of their journey, whatever road they take, non-traditional or traditional path to computer science, that you can do it. It's not just one person that's a computer scientist, not just one gender or one say social economic background. It's everybody has opportunity to do it as long as you work very hard. And so I love the posters to remind them that, yes, see that person, no, doesn't look like me or maybe not. They did it. I can do it as well. And it's not a barrier as far as where you come from, because that's just the obstacle to overcome. And it makes you very resilient when you actually get to your end goal. And it actually makes you very empathetic because you know how hard it took for you to make that journey. And so I'm all about representation in the classroom and having the students see it. I mean, sometimes you have to see it to believe it, but also there are times you have just have to be it by it for yourself and then bring others along as you go. And so I find representation matters a lot as well.
That's really, really cool. Yeah, I think that a lot of kids get sidetracked or bogged down by the computer science celebrities, you know, that are out there, as opposed to like real world people. And you know, it's for the 99.99% of us out here in the world that, you know, aren't going to become celebrities in our lifetime. You know, there needs to be these real life examples of people who are making a life for themselves, are making a career for themselves, are making change, are making an impact in their community. Who might not be, you know, billionaires sending people into space. And, you know, I feel like it, putting emphasis on those examples, on those real people, you know, really opens up access for kids because it's not the goal of like, I need to become a billionaire. It's the goal of like, I want to be really good at this thing that that I'm passionate about. And that's such a much more internal, important sort of lesson to learn, in my opinion, of just, you know, like a feeling like there's something real, something tangible that they can work towards, as opposed to this sort of like crazy image that they might have of something out there. I mean, not to say that they shouldn't shoot for the moon, of course, but you know, it's one of those things. It's that we got to live in the real world.
Yeah, and they're inundated with people and the same, as you said, I love it, like celebrities of computer science, but they're inundated with that. And then on social media, they are as well. But I love to ask them when they'll tell me their favorite video game, okay, but who was the programmer for that? And then they look at
Exactly.
me and I was like, all right, but go research that and tell me tomorrow, right? And they will come back and I'll be like, well, what do you know about them? Oh, well, they started in their garage, or they actually failed like 40 times bringing this to other companies. And you know, the answer is always, that's cool. Is that what you want to do? You know, and so it makes the different pathways available for our kiddos. One of the cool things and opportunities of the lab schools, we have a lot of different pieces of tech. Even though I said tech and computer science are not synonymous, we still use it. And one is an amazing printing machine where, you know, they learn to do graphics through designing on the web. And I always challenge them. I said, when you have your shirt or whatever it is you want to design, code like, and tell me somebody else, you know, and they design these cool graphics that they end up wearing. And it's like these people that I have to ask them, like, who is that again? But I love that they find these new celebrities that they love because they developed their favorite game. They're a programmer that did something super cool that no one knows about. And I think highlighting that is really the most productive in combating this constant battle with social media where we only hear about two, three, four people. And there's so many more contributors to the space.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking when you're talking about celebrities sending people into space or billionaires, I mean, they have a whole team of scientists and engineers actually doing that. It's not that, I mean, he may be funding it, but it's not him that's actually doing the writing and the math on that. It's somebody else. And so I think people forget that, yes, there's a face of the company, but there's also a lot of unsung people that are behind it that are doing the actual hard work, coming up with the different you know, concepts and engineering that goes into all those things. And so don't look at the shiny object. There's a lot that goes about, you know, goes on behind the scenes that they need to think about as well.
Wow, that's so powerful. That is, Ingrid, that is amazing to think about, even quantifying the number of engineers and mathematicians and scientists. Like, now you got me, I think, in ideas for my kids to go look at who's on the team, right? Because those people behind him are doing the work and we never even hear them or see them. But to know that there's probably, I don't even know the quantifiable number, but I mean, hundreds of people that are making this all happen.
Yes, guys, I was thinking about the movie Hidden Figures, where you're like, well, wait a second, those three ladies that they went into the calculations that to have to put somebody into space, you never even heard of them until they made that movie. I'm like, no, there's things like that. People that are behind the scenes are doing stuff that are making a real impact that you never hear about. And those people are important as well.
Definitely.
Agreed. Agreed. I love hearing this sort of thing. There's so many different ways to inspire kids, and the things that are like the loudest and in their face the most often aren't necessarily the most effective. And I think it's really inspiring to hear both of you trying to bring it back right in front of them. You know, like these are the steps. Like this is a real path that you could take to build a life for yourself, to build a career, to do something impactful, to solve problems for your community or people like you. And that's not necessarily a message that you're registering as strongly when you're thinking about how do I become a billionaire the fastest? It's going to make them happier in the long run, and it's going to lead to better tech, better products, better worlds. And I just think that's really, really inspiring. So thank you both for doing that. For someone just starting to explore computer science, what's one piece of advice you'd give them? I'll start. Let's maybe Ingrid, would you start us off this time?
I will say, stay curious. The tech or logic that you learn now is going to be changing in about 5 minutes. And so always be willing to learn. It's really a lifelong learning process. I'm still learning things that I learned 15 years ago as far as front-end development. It's totally changed now. And so just always stay curious. The minute you think that you're the expert in something and you refuse to learn anymore, the minute that you're done in the tech world, you really need to be willing to learn, to do a lot of self-study. There are a lot of courses online, YouTube videos, a lot of people that have content that you can look at. There are a lot of experts in the field, authors that are very good at, you know, they can tell you the latest and greatest. I go to a lot of webinars. I'm a member or board member of RVA Tech, and so I attend a lot of their conferences to hear the latest in the tech field, what's coming in the future, which is always very interesting. I mean, things you never really thought of that is possible with data and AI are maybe 10, 15, and this that's where that, that's where next generation, they're going to be there to meet that those new concepts. And so it's always my one number one thing to tell them is to always stay curious and be willing to learn. And then you'll never be left behind that way.
Stay
Great
curious is
advice.
so awesome. Ingrid, I'm getting so many ideas to bring back to our kiddos and talk to them about it. Shout out to all of our Smith Tech students listening today. I always think stay curious, and with that, I always tell our students this is the field where you can make your own path. In 10, 15 years, there's going to be so much new technology, so much new product-wise, and just make your own path because I don't think we even know what jobs we're preparing our kids for. That's why the soft skills we were talking about is so important because we want them to be computational thinkers and computer scientists so that they can address the problems that exist in the future, which Ingrid, you spoke to, and that they'll be ready to do that if they have those soft skills. And you spoke on researching on the outside, taking the courses, finding things that excite you in computer science, and then going down that rabbit hole. I love when students will say to me, you know, some tidbit they learned, and like, do you think this is true? Or they ask another question, and I love to be like, I don't know, but I'm so excited for you to tell me. But make sure you go to bed before like 11, you know, PM. Like, don't spend all night. But you love that the excitement is there that they're going to spend all night looking into that rabbit hole, and then coming back and talking about it. So that stay curious absolutely means the most to, I guess, generating excitement in our students. But I also want them, like I said, to make their own path and not necessarily stay locked into something that already exists, because quite possibly in 20 years, they're going to do jobs that I didn't even imagine. And that's a really cool thing that they could be crafting their own world ahead of us.
It's really inspiring, and I it it it's oh Ingrid, please.
No, I was going to say you're right about your cutting your own path, and the world is probably a very unknown because things. If you'd have told me, you know, from the banking world that checks are almost gone, it's everything is electronic payments, I wouldn't have believed you. I thought that was the way to go as far as payments, but now that's changed. Now we're doing instant payments in a second to somebody else. Zelle, PayPal, I mean, the world is changing and the future jobs are really unknown. So yes, the path to computer science or tech is broad. It's very vast. And so when I back in the olden days when I was growing up, it was just coding and programming. Those were the messages. But now it's anything you want to be. So yeah, I'd love to hear about Carve Your Own Path because the field is wide open for you.
Absolutely. And I even think in this recently we do a lot with cybersecurity and AI. And if even 5 years you would have go told me that our students would be able to use Gemini or ChatGPT to find any answer, that has put the educational field in a complete 180. But I think it's an amazing opportunity, just like we talked about before, that the students have access to all of the answers. And whether we like it or not in education, we need to be preparing them to finding solutions using the information they have readily at their fingertips to derive new solutions to problems, to look at new pathways, and even for them to interpret the information that they have is so critical right now. But it's not even 5 years ago, and so education needs to stay at the same pace that the computer science field is evolving as well, and that's always a challenge for us.
I love this. I think it's really interesting to maybe even mix these two of like follow the path of your curiosity. You know, it's like keep that curiosity at the forefront, find out what interests you, and then if you have that passion and you want to try and future-proof your job, it's like, "Oh, I want to be a marine biologist." Okay, let's, use Gemini to see what sort of computer science innovations have happened in marine biology. And let's then ask ChatGPT to come up with ideas for small projects of like, how can I use Python to help me study marine biology in some sort of way? And then there's 10 different ways to do anything. So even talking to a kid and saying like, "Oh, that project that you wanted to do, somebody's already doing it." You can just spin it right back at them and say, "Well, yeah, but how would you solve it? Because you're going to solve it differently." There's a book called Steal Your Art. And it's like all good art is stolen. You see a piece of art, it inspires you. Maybe you make a piece of art that's inspired by that other piece of art, but it's still an original piece. But then you get to a certain point where you realize if I wrote it, then it's new, it's original, it's different. And especially with kids in computer science, it's fascinating to hear how they could use all of these different tools to make that path, to follow their curiosity and to create solutions.
Yeah, it's so wild that we can often fear that because we don't understand it. But I look back at the original computers and the development of them and some of those computer scientists talking about computers are here to solve human problems, but they need a catalyst, they need a person, they need that thought partner. And I love the idea that students now are that. What? That's our ancestors of computer scientists' wildest dreams. That in our pocket we'd be holding Gemini or ChatGPT as a thought partner, but then for them to now think about that in a rational way and then also to develop their own thoughts about it. I think a lot of people, there's a misnomer that, technology is doing the work for us when I think it's actually challenging our students to think harder because they have to do the prompting. And they get an answer back, but then it's like, well, then how are you going to design or make that your own? How are you going to make it better? And then you have to continue the prompting. So it's just a different way of thinking that I don't think that we need to fear, but we need to embrace, especially if we're going to get our students ready for what's next in 5, 10, gosh, 20 years.
Yes, I was thinking about when Alan, when he said, don't have Gemini or ChatGPT write the code for you. I wouldn't advise that. It's still a ways away from being able to do that. Right now, it's more of a hindrance than anything else, but it's a good partner. You could tell them, you could tell ChatGPT prompt, what solution is it going to be, and they'll give you an idea. But it's really up to you still to write your own code because having to rewrite the code that they come up with would just take too long. So yeah, right now I see AI as a helper. It could help you come up with ideas. You could brainstorm, with your code and ask them for solutions to problems. But it's not going to take over humankind or our tasks anytime soon. It still has a ways to go. unfortunately or fortunately. So yeah, that I wouldn't be scared. I have the I want people to embrace AI because really it's a helper. A lot of manual tasks that are being done, repetitive things that can be that can be done by a machine are being taken over by bots. And you could be doing something that requires human thinking and it's a little more complex. So yes, AI, I find it it's a partner and not we're not competing for a job or the future.
Totally, totally agree. Yeah, I have used it more as a thought partner, in the recent past, like month or two, honestly, than I had ever before that in terms of, I helped it. I was on a long road trip recently and the AC started to cut out and I asked it like, hey, what do you think this might be the problem? Like, here's the circumstances. It sort of happened before and that these are the similar circumstances that maybe are causing this to happen. And it totally, it just like totally helped me figure it out. And it's like, okay, I could have spent an hour or two watching YouTube videos of people, talking about air conditioners in their car or something like that. But this was able to synthesize a lot of that information for me. And so I just find it really interesting in those sorts of times where it's like, hey, maybe this could help me manage this more complex problem and help, sort of shape my thinking and direct me in the right place as opposed to using it as somebody who's like doing the whole job for me. I don't want you to do it all for me, but I want a structure to figure it out for myself because maybe I just don't necessarily know the steps. And I think it's really, really fun to use it for stuff like that.
It also lets you sit in a different position, figuratively and literally, as you drive the car. Hopefully, you weren't driving,
Right.
but you get a chance to see what a mechanic would be thinking. And I tell my teachers this all the time when they're using any of our language models, ask about how computer science fits into this concept in history. They might be studying the indigenous peoples, and they're supposed to be learning about cybersecurity at the same time. To me, that's a wild mix. And many of my educators are not in computer science backgrounds, but it allows them to generate ideas to say, oh, wow, these do fit together. They can be married and they can do it well. Now let me go figure that out. And then it allows them to be, I think, better educators. It allows them to tap into new fields. And that accessibility makes it so that everybody can be teaching computer science, which is what our students need. It's just not easy to get there when the model for developing educators has changed so much. We don't have time to go back for another, 4 years in computer science to get another degree. But it's right here at our fingertips in a tiny little phone that we can ask and then utilize our talents as educators to provide that instruction for the kids.
I never thought about using it for lesson plans. That's very actually very interesting. And especially disparate topics. I wouldn't even think to put those two together. But I guess ChatGPT, it's smart to say, hey, I have an idea what you can use with those two. That's very great. I like that.
Yeah, because I always say, I mean, lesson planning is unique in itself, but it's the delivery, right? It's our teachers being facilitators of this type of thinking and discussion and networking and not providing the information, but providing the prompting so our students are learning. And so if ChatGPT can write a lesson that connects those, awesome. Maybe we ask our students ahead of that lesson, hey, how do you think these topics are going to align today? And and their faces are going to be like, no, we're not doing that. Yes, we are. And then suddenly at the end, it's like, wow, we probably wouldn't have thought of that. So I think that's just another aspect of how instead of fearing technology, we need to harness that piece because it's there for us to utilize and just become better educators in the space.
That surprise moment for the kids, for the teachers, that that's such a good hook, to get them engaged of like, how do you think that these two things are going to mesh up? Oh, you don't think so. And yet, but that surprise moment was provided by a machine learning, by a machine. That's like, I love that. I think that's such an interesting way to use it again as a thought partner and how it can integrate into our lives without being detrimental to the learning process. Because it's if we're looking 5 to 10 years in the future, in theory, this is what's going to be the norm. If we're all using it in our day-to-day lives, then we can only assume that they're going to be doing so in the same way or in different ways, but in the same, capacity or more capacity or things like that. It's hard to tell what the future holds, but it's something that we have to assume is going to continue on the way that it's going until something else disruptive comes along and changes everything again, which of course I'm sure will happen.
For
Yeah, I
sure.
like that more balanced
We have to be
approach.
ready for anything.
Ingrid, you like that more than what?
I like that balanced approach with you using AI as just a jump start, because if you use it for the final answer in the working world, you can't ask ChatGPT when you're in a meeting. There's no way you can pause. Okay, pause. Wait, I don't know the answer. Let me ask Chat. There's no way you could do that. So you have to develop those skills. So you can't rely solely on all those on those AI language models. You have to really develop those skills on your own. So over-reliance would be a detriment if it were turned into that kind of thing. It really, because on the fly, you can't do that. You need to be able to think on your feet in the working world. So there is no bot that's going to tell you anything. You need to be able to think on your own. So I like the balanced approach. It
Love
just
it.
using
Love
it as
thinking on
a
your
jump
feet.
start. Yeah.
Yes. Well, let's do a quick sort of topical shift here, just because I know that this is something that is something that we talked about in both of our individual conversations. So, considering your individual experience, how has computer science provided a pathway to economic well-being, not just for you personally, but potentially for the students you educate, Helen, or the professionals you work alongside, Ingrid? What tangible benefits have you seen computer science offer in terms of career stability and growth?
Ingrid, do you want to hit this one first?
Sure. So I'll go at it from two aspects. From the class, well, not a classroom, but from being out and volunteering for the students, I've seen it change the trajectory of the child's life. And so they come from an underserved background where there isn't a lot of resources or equipment. And just being using robotics or coding or refurbishing laptops, just little things that made them think that I could be in the tech world. I've seen them pursue certificates or actually go to college pursuing computer science. And so, from that background to being a professional, I've seen it change students' lives. And so, that is what one of the reasons why I'm so big on promoting STEM and the for the future generations, because I've seen it change their life. It changes generational wealth. I mean, financial stability, because really all tech and tech education and STEM, it just gives you access and networking and availability and give you choices. You're not stuck working a $15 minimum wage job where you're being told what to do. You have the option to be a consultant. You have the option to start your own business. It just gives you options. And that's really what I've seen the benefit of computer science and STEM in the work in the real life, is that they have options and choices, and it's changed the way that they live for future generations. So they're no longer in poverty. They're actually in a middle class background now. And then that generation is going to a better school, and they have more opportunities. So I've changed it. I've seen it change lives, and that's very powerful. And I don't know many fields that actually have an opportunity to do that, because when you get certification or if you go to college, your starting salary is much higher than normal. And so that just starts you off in a very, very great direction. And so I've seen it impact lives, and it's life changing. So, and I've seen that through COVA. I've seen a lot of your students. I watched them grow from middle schoolers, and I've seen them actually enter college. I'm like, okay, I knew they were sharp when I saw them the first time, but they actually finished it out, found a thread all the way through, went to college. I mean, that's powerful. So I've seen it change lives.
Ingrid, you're so right. The power of the life-changing moments is kind of what keeps me going every single day at work. And you spoke on choices, and I absolutely believe that computer science allows us to create new pathways. There's this whole talent pipeline that is untapped. And here in Hampton Roads especially, we have a lot of jobs where For example, there's the shipyard, and you could go in working a minimum wage job right out of high school. Or if you have the certifications and suddenly you knew that you wanted to explore, say, welding, and then you have these great opportunities to eventually become, say, an underwater welder, and you're making exponentially more and thus providing for your family. And moving out of the socioeconomic area that they're in and having a chance for a better life, I think that is absolutely critical. And I think it's about giving choices in all of our areas. So we're very much trying to push our students to consider every opportunity, whether they're enrolled in a college, employed right after high school, or enlisted. But even I think about going and joining, the armed forces and those that serve us, if you already know, wow, I want to be in a drone unit or I want to do things with robotics, that already gives them a lift, a step forward, and a directional path that oftentimes they might not have considered because it wasn't easily accessible for them. For example, we have an amazing grant through our Smith Tech that allowed us to open a lab called GoTech, which is Great Opportunities in Tech and Engineering Careers. And we follow nine different pathways from IT healthcare to welding to mechanical engineering, precision machining. And students get to do all of the hands-on projects. So they get to see, wow, I didn't even know that someone in the manufacturing world might do this. Or I didn't know that there was a job for me with automation and robotics, where I could be working programming assembly lines to streamline this process. And I think if we're getting our students at 11, 12, 13, 14 to see that, then by the time they're in high school and beyond, they've been exposed to so many more opportunities. And Alan, for me, that's why I love being the administrator of the lab school is and bringing in people from the industry to talk to our kids, right? In jobs that they never knew existed, because that's what's going to move them to new opportunities in the future.
Yes, I'm going to say a few very obvious statements. No child likes growing up in poverty. Kids know when their family is in poverty, and kids are not empowered to be able to change their parents' situation, right? That's not necessarily something that is easy for them to do, conceive, create. From the ages of like 12 to 18, like you see it, you experience it, you live in it. And then, so taking this idea that like they can take control of their own future and do one of the most difficult things to do, which is shift socioeconomic levels, like that is something that is incredibly, incredibly difficult to do. And then showing them these opportunities where, like computer science, they may not imagine themselves as a computer scientist, connected to factory work or something like that. But it's like I know of a startup that's got some people in Richmond at one of our startup like incubators that they work for a company that's based out of Norfolk that like creates factory layouts with bespoke machines that communicate with each other over the Internet of Things that are, managed remotely. If one of them goes down or encounters a software hiccup or something like that, that they're able to fix it remotely and it's all, wirelessly managed and things like that. They obviously have to have somebody in there, because the factory's making something, et cetera, et cetera. But, this is a worldwide company. They're building factories all across the world. And it's like, what an interesting niche sort of concept to be a mechanical engineer or a computer scientist that's working in this field, and you're not just making, just an app. You're not making a little something that, maybe a few people are going to use. It's something that's really, really hyper specific and, opening kids' eyes to those opportunities where it's like, I don't just have to sit in front of a computer and write code all day. I might be involved in something more hands-on. And there are tons of kids who would love to be involved in computer science who immediately look at a screen full of code and say, no, thanks. That's not for me. It's never going to be be for me. And part of our job as educators is to be like, well, take a dip in. Let's walk down the steps into the shallow end really fast and see how you feel about the water, you know, that sort of a situation of like, let's do that. But then also, okay, if that's still not your speed, if that's still not your favorite flavor of ice cream, then like, look at this. Like, I have a buffet of ice cream flavors that you can choose from that don't involve anything involving, you know, mint chocolate chip. You know, it's like if you hate that, then there's all these other sort of opportunities out there. And it's just the ability for computer science to open kids' eyes to those opportunities, I think, is a really unique aspect of this educational sort of area.
And
I love
that's
you. Oh, sorry, Ingrid, go ahead.
I was gonna say that's why I love Code VA because you're from you do a lot of STEAM. You infuse art into the lessons, and so you make it more accessible. I love your robotics team because it's the VEX robots that are lower cost to get into, lower entry, and so it and your block coding with little robots. So it's just the teeny things that you make it very easy and accessible, and it has kind of sparked something. It's not so hard. I'm making a little robot or a little art project. Got a little battery to it, and it moves. I mean, it's just something so simple that shows them that, you know, it doesn't take a lot to get into this field. It's not overly difficult, and there's as Helen said, there's pathways and choices. I mean, the field is wide open, so you have opportunity to do anything you want. You choose your own path, and so I like Helen. I appreciate you having them introducing to these concepts, soft skills, hard skills early. That's very important because by the time I talk to them in high school, usually they're kind of made up their mind. They're not really thinking tech. It's kind of hard to convince them when they're in high school. But I liked what start early. I agree with starting early because then it opens their mind more. They're not so set on I can't do it. They see the possibilities, and so yeah, I enjoy the educator perspective. I always appreciate the educators. I know it's a job that's sometimes long hours. You got to buy your own supplies. It's a lot of work, but you I mean I know it has to be very rewarding because you do a lot for the students in our future. So thank you.
Oh, that's so kind. I owe it to my teachers though, because they're the ones that are putting in that time. I try to be the person providing the resources, providing the continuity, and saying yes to ideas. I think that in education, we need more yeses. When someone will bring an idea and say, "Can we build?" Yes. I will figure out the money behind it. I will go figure out how the resources. And the beautiful thing is, there's always partnerships. There's always industry partners and businesses that are willing to support us. I think when we are aligned to what they're looking for professionals as well. And I think that we need to do a better job in outreach and including people so we know what their employers are going to be like in 10, 15 years and what they want to see. I love, Alan, when you were giving the ice cream analogy. You're right. Everyone doesn't like mint chocolate chip, and that might be programming, but I have computer scientists in art class right now doing stop animation and programming that. And then you tell them, but you are a programmer. And then it's watching that light bulb moment where they say, huh, I am a programmer in the space that I love, which is art and creation. And suddenly it's very different than the stereotypical programmer that they're in their mind, been inundated in social media and television to see. And they can see it now in their own space. And maybe that's butter pecan ice cream, you know? So every flavor.
Love that. I love that. Yes. Making sure that kids get, you know, get to see all the different opportunities out there. And then we're gonna a last quick shift, and this will probably be our last question for today. I again really appreciate both of you. But I want to touch on emotional resilience because I know that this is something that's been it's been brought up in other episodes of the podcast, and I, being a theater person, love talking about emotions, you know, and I think that emotions are a really big part of the journey of computer science, you know, of being a lifelong learner, of building something and watching it work, watching it not work, is there is an emotional investment quotient to that that I don't think should be or can be ignored. Especially we're talking about middle schoolers, so emotions are sort of maybe at the surface. I don't know, I don't want to generalize about middle schoolers per se, but in the ones that I've interacted with, they can tend to be emotional. You know, love them to death. But so Ingrid, you spoke of the importance of emotional resilience in tech. And so how has the journey through computer science, with its inherent challenges and problem-solving demands, cultivated your own emotional resilience? And how do you see this resilience as a critical success for you in the field? And then Helen, you know, how have you seen that in your students or you personally? You know, in your role, you know, you said you have an English background or English degree background, and then, you know, jumping into this and those sorts of things. So whoever wants to start.
Ingrid, do you want to go first, or I don't care?
I'll go first. So for emotional resilience, and well, for my work life is it's very important. I think about it was for the Office of Comptroller of the Currency. They regulate banks and make sure that they're adhering to rules. And so they came up with a rule that needed to be implemented in a year. And so that involved a lot of travel for me. That involved a lot of going through audit. That involved a lot of late night meetings and a lot of stress. And so that took a lot of resiliency. So you're going to need that in your work life. You're going to have to rely on being empathetic with your team. Everybody's stressed out. You can't take out your feelings on everybody else. We're all in the same boat. You have to be take some time off for yourself. You're feeling overwhelmed. It's good to just go to the side, take a few breaths and recuperate. And so part of, because we're human beings, we're not robots. And so you have to learn how to regulate your feelings. And so even if you disagree with somebody, you can't have an outburst during the meeting. You can just pull them aside later, have a discussion. So you have to learn when you enter the workforce, and you can start now as a young child, just to regulate. There are times and places to show your emotions, and there's times when you can't do that. You just have to stay stoic and then speak your mind later. And so that's a part of work life. You have to find a balance because you're entitled to your feelings, you're tied to your opinions, but in order to get the job done, you have to put that aside for a minute and then soldier on. And then at the end, maybe you have a debrief and you can spout whatever you want to do, but you have to learn how to regulate your feelings. And then that's the part of, well, your personal life, because you can't say everything. It can be insulting a lot of people, but at work and real life and work life, you have to learn how to regulate your feelings and your emotions. And while they are important, they are valid, you have to learn how to balance that on a day-to-day basis.
I think the balancing emotions is the struggle of every person in middle school. Alan, you spoke on that very, very eloquently. But I think that our students have an overwhelming amount of grit. And so when we tap into that, and I think the grit comes from their backgrounds and the challenges that they've overcome, the adversities that they see day to day before even entering the educational space really provides them a lot of strength when they're going into the computer science field. One thing we had talked about before was letting them know the answer ahead of time so that they're creating the pathways to the answer. But it's also challenging them that there is no failure. There's just, and so, what's next? You know, this hit a roadblock, and so what are you going to do? And that comes with a huge shift in education as well. It's not finite grading on did you get the right answer the first time and show your work? It's, oh, you got the wrong answer, but then you went back and found where you got it wrong, you changed it, you went back through, you found the right answer, and encouraging that thought process versus always having to be perfect and always having to be right. Because I love, there's a quote about computers and how programming is always like 98% complete and 95% not complete. And it's like this duality of like, it'll never really be done. So why are we telling our students that you have to get the right answer, you have to be done with this? Maybe you look at it again with fresh eyes tomorrow. Maybe you come back to this math problem that you're also working with algorithms on, and you talk to somebody or you do a thought pair share with ChatGPT, and then you're coming back to it in a new way. And I think that helps build the emotional resilience to say, even if I fail, there really isn't failure because I can do it again. And offering those chances is paramount in them strengthening that and using their grit to help build their capacity. I also think it's providing mentors. And so, Ingrid, I love that you're working with kids because when partners in the field come in and provide mentorship to our students, they start to see this light. And then they also hear the real life struggles of other individuals and how they overcame them. And everybody needs to see that and relate to humans in the field so that they see that that's a normal thing. I right now am studying for the computer science praxis, which is instrumentally hard for me as an English teacher and then an administrator, but I thought I'm asking my students and my teachers to struggle every day, so I can struggle too. And man, am I learning coding and programming and the impacts of computing and cybersecurity and all the amazing strands of computer science. But it also gives me a pathway to talk to people about it, like, wow, I'm really stuck here. Or did you know? And then suddenly that becomes the dialogue across our school. And then suddenly you would be surprised the kids or teacher that'll be like, oh, I know this. I learned it and I can show you. And I love that. Like that is creating a community that is based on learning and collaboration. And I think that just builds that resilience across everybody because we're in it together, even though we're all going our separate paths.
Yeah, I love that, especially about, and so for a failure, because that's the one of the things that we stress at, as a bank and probably any workplace is if you make a mistake or you see something wrong, raise your hand and say, I made a mistake. We could correct the mistake, but hiding it and letting maybe an auditor or somebody else see is not a good thing. So it's always good to escalate things if we see something, an issue. Or raise your hand and admit that you made a mistake, because the mistake is not the issue. It's the hiding or the not admitting that you made a mistake, it leads to bigger problems. So I love that you're teaching them that, failure, yes, you've had a failure, but how can we fix this? Do you need help? We could collaborate on the solution. And so that's what we promote as a bank, is to escalate and to raise your hand when you see issues. And that makes things run much smoother.
I love there's a little parallel that my brain just built in terms of Sapiko, what you said about, okay, you encountered a problem, and so what are we going to do about it? And I'm imagining at in some point in there's a walk away moment, there's a break moment, like give your brain some time to sort of digest what went wrong with your code or with that problem that you were trying to solve. Like you didn't get the exact right solution right at first. So then let's take a moment to step back, and then let's return to the problem. And then Ingrid, that's sort of what you mentioned in terms of like emotionally regulating yourself. Like, okay, this coworker. Like I encountered a problem with a coworker, that this communication that we were having encountered a bug where, I was trying to describe something and they didn't necessarily get what I was trying to say. And that's frustrating, but I'm not going to, punch the computer. I'm not going to yell at my coworker. I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to like emotionally regulate a little bit, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to, work it out with them. We're going to try and solve this problem together. And it's what an interesting way of sort of teaching emotional resiliency between two people and then also between a person and a computer system. It's like this sort of same formula of like, okay, create some space for yourself so that your brain can process and then return back and see if you can find a solution to it. So that's really, I love that. Well, I believe we are approaching our final thoughts, final feelings, things like that. Are there any sort of messages that either of you wanted to give the listeners, in this last couple of minutes? Anything that we didn't touch on? Ingrid, any last thoughts? Anything that anything you wish you'd known before you got into computer science?
Well, my last thoughts are the wish for accessibility. I wish that now I love the lab school idea. I love the Center of Excellence's idea, but I still see other schools struggling for even a computer or a STEM program. So I wish there was a balance in funding. We spend a lot on these initiatives, but then teachers can't buy, teachers can't buy, they need to buy their own supplies. I wish there's a balance in STEM education. I wish STEM was available to everybody. I wish that it was in all programs. I know that it's mandated by the state, but I don't think they're enforcing that. Well, I heard it, it's not really being enforced. And so I just wish that, all students had a STEM program. I wish that all students had access to the internet. I wish all students had access to a computer, and that they get had early access to these programs so they can learn. And so I just wish that the funds were distributed more evenly. I'm not sure what the thinking is, but I always see this new, oh, we have a new a center of excellence here, but yet the teacher is asking me for funding for because they can't afford to do robotics. I mean, that something has to give. I don't know. I don't know who sets the budget, but I just wish that everybody had the same, it was an even playing field for everybody. And so it just won't be focused on one area because there's a very interesting map from RVA Rising about a population of students that will be less fortunate than their parents. And it's focused on an area that you would imagine that it'd be focused on. It's all the low income areas. They're going to be worse off than their parents, and so it's a lack of access, a lack of funding. I just wish that we had funding across the board evenly for all students had access to STEM and the education that they deserve. Those are my thoughts. I'm always so perplexed as to. No, one school is struggling, but then we have a shiny school over here. I just don't get it.
I could not agree with you more. And part of the reason I took this position is because it's in a school that is near and dear to my heart. That is a Title I school. And the idea to co-locate it inside the school is that we start with these 300 students, which is a third of the population. And of those 300 students, like 95% are from that zone. And so they're getting that immediate instruction. And then when the teachers build the content and curriculum around the CS integration to the core contents, all of those are open resource. So then the teachers in the rest of the building can incorporate those lessons and computational thinking in their contents as well. And so my goal is always looking at how do we bleed this and scale it to the entire community. And I think you're right, there is a very big deficit in funding in different areas, but I also think it's a deficit for information because computer science doesn't need necessarily money. Yes, it would be great to have the drones and the robotics kits, but they can be doing low or no tech lessons where they're getting that same computational thinking. And so my goal is to bleed out into the rest of the building. But then also, we host family nights as part of our grant that bring in childcare for anyone younger, and then anyone school age, K through 12, can come in and do the projects with our students. And then our students become the leaders to say, hey, I'm doing this coding project with a 3D printers, creating these really cool name tags. And then family members, kids, other schools can come in and do it with our kiddos. And so you're absolutely right. I think that we need to always be looking at how do we spread this? How do we just not contain it to one area, one group of kids, but how do we take what we've learned and make it so that it's available and accessible for all? Because if we keep it and we never share it, then we're never actually truly addressing the problem. And so my goal, and I'd love to talk to you more about this because I think that our industry partners and our community partners too can help us I know we do a lot with the library and community centers in South Norfolk, and they host nights too, where our kids can go there and shine and show other kids what they're doing. And suddenly they're community leaders and they're becoming these CS experts and sharing their passion for it too. So I'm always open to ideas of how do we scale this bigger. And how do we include everyone? Because the worst thing we could do is make computer science this field that is closed in, right? This field of luxury that you only get it if you can do X, Y, and Z, when really it should be for everyone. And you speak on the standards going out in 2024, there was new Virginia standards for everyone for computer science. And there was, that we need to be teaching it in all areas. So my hope is that the lessons we craft will be pushing out. And so that everybody can be tapping into those resources and saying, oh, okay, cool. At Smith Tech, in history, they were learning about this piece of computer science and the American Revolution. I can do that in my school too. And my students can have that experience as well. Just a small piece of what we're trying to do. Because when you said that, I was like, yep. My goal is never to keep it because I felt like computer science was this thing that was kept, only for this certain group of people, when really it's everybody. And I think that's the coolest part.
Love that. I didn't realize you were a Title I school. Okay. All right. So that's the way to do it. That to integrate into an area that doesn't have it. Because the models I've seen are the ones that are already have all the resources and now they have a
Yes.
center. So I'm like, well, what's the point of that? They already have resources. They don't need this thing. But yeah, I like that.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for
Anytime you're down in
that.
Chesapeake in South Norfolk, you come through. Our kids are the most lovable kiddos ever. And so to bring in a school of computer science that these students are so proud to be in, to me is just noteworthy because I have them, when they see me in the hallway, as they're starting to go in next year, they'll like high five me. And we recently sent these snail mail postcards out that said in code, like you're accepted, and then had this QR code they scanned, and the teachers were saying welcome and giving them like challenge puzzles to do and stuff. And the kids were like, did you send me mail? Yes, I did, because I'm so excited that you're a part of this. And I'm so excited that you and your family came out to those nights and you put your name in the lottery and you knew that this was something that could change the trajectory of your life. I'm gonna keep mailing you. And so they bring in these little postcards and they're like, I did it. This is the code, right? And I was like, hold on, I gotta check. Because that's not my background. Yeah, so that has been the coolest experience, is to bring it to this community. And the pride in South Norfolk that the kids are leading things is just so cool.
Thank you, thank you. That's I love that. Now that made my day because I always hear about these initiatives and they're already in somewhere where that's have so many resources. I'm like, and I don't want taken away from anybody, any kids. That's and that's never my point. But I'm like, well, what about over here? And can they have at least a little something over here to help them out? It just needs to be more of
Yeah,
that.
a fourth 3D printer isn't going to impact a child's life as much as going from zero to one 3D printers in a school.
Yes.
You know, there
Oh
is,
my goodness.
yes.
Yes.
So I loved hearing what a great note to end on in terms of, empowering kids and making sure that they are that the resources are going to the places where they can be the most impactful. So that's something that Code VA tries to do. And I love that both of you are trying to do that as well. That's why I invited you on this podcast. I appreciate you both so much for stopping in today and doing this recording with me because I think that this is a really powerful episode and I'm super excited to put it out there into the world. So yeah, I'll say goodbye for now and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Helen.
Absolutely, you as well.